I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
They live in Asda. I don't know. What matters is that they are martyred, torn to pieces. I don't know anything about what happened. Thank God. Thank God.
The death toll in Gaza continues to climb following airstrikes and attacks on Palestinians seeking food and water. Many of the injured were brought to Nasser Hospital, the largest still functioning hospital in Gaza. We'll speak with Dr. Tarek Loubani, who's been volunteering there since June. Then, how Netanyahu prolonged the war in Gaza to stay in power. That's the headline of a new New York Times investigation. We'll speak with the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Ronen Bergman. Finally, to California, where a federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration from conducting sweeping immigration raids and racially profiling people in Los Angeles and surrounding areas. Yet ICE raids over the weekend led to hundreds of arrests of farm workers. At least one man has died. We'll speak to the mayor of Oxnard and a student activist who witnessed the raid.
During the immigration raids, ICE and National Guard came to Ventura County, California, and abducted over 200 people, U.S. citizens, documented, undocumented, all across the board. It affected thousands across the area. The message today for others is that ICE is affecting everyone. It doesn't matter what you look like, where you come from. This is something that is devastating all of our communities.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The official death toll in Gaza has topped 58,000, as health officials say over 200 Palestinians were killed over the past 3 days, including at least 28 so far today. On Sunday, an Israeli missile strike killed at least 10 Palestinians, including 6 children, at a water distribution point in Nuseirat refugee camp. 17 others were wounded in the blast. Israel also attacked a market in Gaza City on Sunday, killing at least 17 people. On Saturday, health officials in Gaza reported at least 38 Palestinian aid seekers were killed. Hassan Omran is an ambulance paramedic in Khan Yunis.
Today, more than 150 injuries and more than 20 martyrs around the aid distribution centers. Most of the gunshot injuries we see are in the head or the torso. The Israeli occupation purposely kills and annihilates people. The occupation uses this policy to carry out mass killings by calling on people to get their daily food. Then when these people get there, they get killed in cold blood.
Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Israeli leader Yair Lapid have denounced a proposal by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government to forcibly move Palestinians in Gaza into a so-called humanitarian city to be built on the ruins of Rafah. Olmert and Lapid likened the proposal to forming a concentration camp. Olmert said the plan would also amount to ethnic cleansing. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli settlers fatally beat a 20-year-old Palestinian-American from Tampa, Florida. Sefola Musalet was killed on Friday while visiting family in the village of Al-Masra's Asharqiya. He is reportedly the 7th American killed in the West Bank since October 2023. A second Palestinian, Mohammed Al-Shalabi, was shot dead during the settler attack. Musalat's cousin, Sefola, read a statement from the family.
We are devastated that our beloved Sefola Musalat, nicknamed Seif, was brutally beaten to death in our family's land by illegal Israeli settlers who were attempting to steal it. Israeli settlers surrounded Seif for over 3 hours as paramedics attempted to reach him. But the mob of settlers blocked the ambulance and paramedics from providing life-saving aid. After the mob of Israeli settlers cleared, hours later, Saif's younger brother rushed to carry him to the ambulance. Saif was killed and died before reaching the hospital.
A new ship from the Freedom Flotilla Coalition has set sail from Italy with hopes of breaking the siege on Gaza. The Handala's voyage comes just over a month after Israeli forces raided and seized an earlier aid ship, the Madeleine, in international waters. This is the Brazilian activist Tiago Avila, who was detained last month by Israeli forces during the raid.
We believe that if it was not the Madeleine, then the Handala. If it's not the Handala, the next mission that will be bigger will break the siege of Gaza. Because a regime that depends on starving children to death and bombing hospitals, schools, shelters, and residential areas to stay on top of people cannot survive. So we understand that the whole world is uniting against this genocide. The peoples of the world, on a planet of 8 billion people, the vast majority, they are so against this violation, and they want to do something. So that's why we're here, to do something together. This boat goes with the hearts and minds of millions of people behind it.
In Britain, police arrested at least 71 people in London, Cardiff, and Manchester for publicly supporting Palestine Action, an anti-genocide direct action group that was recently banned under Britain's Terrorism Act. It's now illegal to belong to the group or even express any support for the organization. Police in London said illegal acts include chanting, wearing clothing, or displaying articles such as flags, signs, or logos related to Palestine Action. Individuals arrested could face up to 14 years in prison. In California, a farm worker who fell from the roof of a greenhouse during an immigration raid last week died over the weekend of his injuries. 57-year-old Jaime Alanis had worked at the farm in Camarillo for 10 years and provided for his wife and daughter who live in Mexico. His niece says he'll now be laid to rest in his hometown in Michoacán. The raid Thursday led to a confrontation between protesters defending the workers and ICE agents who tear-gassed crowds, which included children. Jaime Alanis is the first known person to die in an ICE raid as part of Trump's immigration crackdown. This comes as a federal judge in California temporarily blocked the Trump administration Friday from conducting sweeping immigration raids and racially profiling people in Los Angeles and surrounding areas. Judge Mame Uise Mensa Frimpong said agents are prohibited from targeting people based on their apparent ethnicity, the language they're speaking, their presence at a particular location, or the type of work they're engaged in. The judge also ordered immigration authorities to provide anyone they arrest with immediate access to lawyers. One of the plaintiffs in the case is Brian Gavidia, who was aggressively pushed up against a fence by ICE agents during a raid and questioned as he repeatedly told the agents he was a U.S. citizen. Gavidia spoke at a press conference Friday.
I truly believe that. I believe in the Constitution. I believe in America. I believe in what we stand. I believe in this court system. And I believe that what's going down right now in the United States is wrong. I believe in the Constitution. We are ignoring the Constitution at the very moment. It is not right. We will not stand down. We are all Americans here. We will not allow this to happen. We follow the Constitution.
In more immigration news, Democratic lawmakers blasted the horrific conditions in Florida's new immigration jail in the Everglades, known as Alligator Alcatraz, after visiting the facility Saturday. This is Florida Congressmember Maxwell Frost.
Hey, everybody, I just left the Everglades internment camp, the Everglades detention facility for immigrants, and I got to tell you that the conditions are horrible. These are people being caged. 32 people per cage, only three toilets for a group of 32 grown men, and where they drink water is from the toilet. It's only a spigot that comes from the toilet, and that's where you also drink water. And, you know, they didn't let us walk fully in. They opened the door and let us look in, and people were yelling at us, help me, help me. I heard somebody in the back yell, I'm a U.S. citizen. We're going to look into that.
The Miami Herald found hundreds of detainees at the Everglades Immigration Prison have no records or criminal charges, contradicting claims by the Trump administration. In Arizona, two Tucson area volunteer aid workers are seeking damages after Homeland Security agents dressed in plain clothes pointed assault-style rifles at them, handcuffed and detained them along a border wall road in March. 74-year-old Gail Kukurik, who regularly assists asylum seekers at the border with water, food and medical supplies, is well known and friendly with the regular border agents in the area. She was driving a vehicle with a Samaritan's logo on it at the time of the incident in March. In Vermont, judges ordered the release on bond of two jailed immigrant rights leaders. Jose Ignacio Nacho de la Cruz and Heidi Perez were violently arrested last month after being pulled over on the road. They organized with the group Migrant Justice. In Texas, the death toll from this month's massive flooding has reached 132. On Sunday, heavy rain and new flooding forced a halt to search efforts. Meanwhile, the New York Times has revealed FEMA did not answer thousands of calls from flood survivors after Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem did not renew contracts for four call center companies the day after the flooding. On Monday, July 7th, FEMA received over 16,400 calls. Only about 2,600 calls were answered, about 16% of all calls. In Arizona, a historic lodge at Grand Canyon's North Rim has burned down, along with dozens of other structures, as a pair of wildfires burned more than 45,000 acres of land. The North Rim had been evacuated on Thursday. President Trump's special envoy to Ukraine and Russia, retired Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, has arrived in Kyiv a day after Trump announced plans to send Patriot missiles and other weapons to Ukraine. This comes as Russia continues to intensify its attacks on Ukraine. On Sunday, Trump criticized Russian President Vladimir Putin, saying, quote, "He'll talk so beautifully, then he'll bomb people at night. We don't like that," Trump said. Iranian state media is reporting the Iranian president, Masoud Pezeshkian, was slightly injured last month when Israel bombed a meeting site of Iran's Supreme National Security Council. Pezeshkian reportedly suffered leg injuries as he escaped from the underground facility in Tehran. A new UN report warns nearly 5,000 people were killed in Haiti in just the past 9 months. Gang violence has surged beyond the capital of Port-au-Prince. The UN is urging the international community to support the Kenya-led security mission currently deployed in Haiti and to curb the flow of firearms into the country. UN human rights spokesperson Ravina Shamdasani spoke on Friday.
Caught in the middle of this unending horror story are the Haitian people, who are at the mercy of horrific violence by gangs and exposed to human rights violations from the security forces, as well as abuses by the so-called self-defense groups.
On Friday, the State Department fired more than 1,300 workers. The American Foreign Service Association, which represents U.S. diplomats, slammed the firing, saying, quote, "Losing more diplomatic expertise at this critical global moment is a catastrophic blow to our national interests," unquote. President Trump's continuing to threaten major tariffs on some of the closest trading partners of the United States. On Saturday, Trump threatened to impose 30% tariffs on Mexico and the European Union, effective August 1st. The EU's Trade Commission said such a move would make transatlantic trade, quote, almost impossible. A major rift has emerged within President Trump's MAGA movement over his administration's handling of the case of Jeffrey Epstein, the dead convicted sex trafficker who Trump once called a terrific guy. On Saturday, Trump backed his attorney general, Pam Bondi, days after she released a memo claiming that Epstein did not keep a client list and that no further disclosures would be warranted, despite her previous claims that the client list was on her desk. This reportedly led to a heated confrontation between Bondi and Dan Bongino, FBI deputy director. Bongino did not go to work on Friday and reportedly considered resigning over the issue. In a long social media post on Saturday, Trump urged his supporters to forget about the Epstein files, sparking new outrage within the MAGA movement. Meanwhile, in Congress, Democratic Representative Ro Khanna plans to introduce an amendment to force a vote demanding the full Epstein files be released to the public. Congressmember Khanna wrote, quote, "Why are the Epstein files still hidden? Who are the rich and powerful being protected?" he asked. Over the weekend, President Trump also threatened to revoke the citizenship of U.S.-born comedian Rosie O'Donnell, a longtime critic of the president. The legal expert said such a move would be patently unconstitutional. And former Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has died at the age of 82. He first came to power in the 80s in a military coup and later turned to electoral politics, where in 2015 he became the first ever opposition candidate to win a presidential election in Nigeria. He vowed to combat corruption and insecurity, but widespread violence continued to spread throughout Nigeria and the larger region during his presidency. He served two terms, was succeeded in 2023 by Nigeria's current president, Bola Tinubu. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Negotiations for a Gaza ceasefire deal appear to have stalled, but are ongoing in Doha. The U.S. is backing a 60-day ceasefire with a phased release of hostages, but significant gaps remain between Israeli and Hamas positions. The official death toll in Gaza has topped 58,000, though it's expected to be far higher with people buried in the rubble, as Israeli forces continue to target Palestinians seeking aid. On Sunday, an Israeli missile strike killed at least 10 Palestinians, including six children, at a water distribution point in Nuseirat refugee camp. At least 17 others were wounded in the blast. Israel's also attacked a market in Gaza City on Sunday, killing at least 17 people. According to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, nearly 800 people have been killed in Gaza while attempting to access aid just since late May, when the U.S. and Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, or GHF, took over most aid distribution sites. On Saturday, at least 27 Palestinians were killed, more than 180 injured, when Israeli forces opened fire on people waiting for humanitarian aid at a distribution site near Rafah. This is Palestinian paramedic Hassan Omran.
Today, more than 150 injuries and more than 20 martyrs around the aid distribution centers. Most of the gunshot injuries we see are in the head or the torso. The Israeli occupation purposely kills and annihilates people. The occupation uses this policy to carry out mass killings by calling on people to get their daily food. Then when these people get there, they get killed in cold blood.
The injured from Saturday's massacre were taken to Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. Early this morning, Israeli airstrikes wounded and killed several people. This is Itamad Abu Daka, the aunt of a child injured in the strikes.
They live in Azda. I don't know. What matters is that they are martyred, torn to pieces. I don't know anything about what happened. Thank God. Thank God. What is this child's fault? Was he carrying a weapon? Was he fighting them? Was he fighting? Is he a fighter?
This morning's injured were taken to Nasser Hospital, the largest functioning hospital in Gaza, facing fuel shortages and a widening Israeli offensive in the area. We go now to Nasser Hospital, to Gaza, to speak with Dr. Tariq Libani, an emergency room medical doctor who has been volunteering at Nasser Hospital in Gaza since June. He's the medical director of the GLIA Project, an organization creating open-source medical devices for low-resource communities. In 2018, Dr. Libani was among 19 medics shot by the Israeli military in Gaza. In October 2023, Dr. Libani was arrested for nonviolently protesting, calling for a ceasefire. He's also a Palestinian refugee. Dr. Libani, welcome back to Democracy Now! Today from Nasser Hospital. Can you describe the injuries, the fatalities that you're seeing?
The injuries are every manner of terrible injuries for a doctor to see. So one of the things that we've grown very accustomed to is, for example, bombings and crush injuries in Gaza. I've been working here for 15 years. However, every day brings a new type of severe and terrible injuries. For example, yesterday, there were gunshot wounds to the head. Two or three days ago, we were noticing especially young men and boys were getting gunshots to the groin. And so every day seems to be a new exercise in the depths of human depravity in terms of targeting men, boys, women, and children. Especially in terms of the youngest children, I think every doctor who operates and works in Palestine will tell you that that's the most jarring, the most terrible part of our job, is just the war on children on every level.
Mm. Can you talk about the injuries you're seeing as a result of people lining up to get aid from the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, GHF, that shadowy Israeli U.S. so-called aid organization that so many international aid organizations have condemned? Talk about what you've seen there and the AP investigation saying they releasing video showing the opening fire on the aid seekers.
There was no surprise to me when I saw the AP video. It was exactly what patients and Palestinians have been telling me and have been telling us for the past month and a half since GHF really started operating. Almost immediately when they started operating, they started massacring civilians. The injury patterns, there are two major injury types. One of them is sniper-style shots, people who are shot very clear, deliberately in the head, especially, or in some other part of the body like the groin. And then the other one is where they just unload some semi-automatic or automatic machine, like a machine gun or a light machine gun, into a crowd of people, where essentially what they do is they open fire on these heavily, densely packed groups of people and end up not just killing and wounding the people who are seeking aid, but people even up to a kilometer away, especially when they're using the heavier weapons. As well, the Israeli army is clearly a part of the massacres. Many of the massacres happen by Israelis and many of them happen by the mercenaries who pretend to be humanitarian aid workers for the GHF. And the Israeli army will also shoot at collections of Palestinians, will fire on tents close to them. So we see all of these types of injuries as well. For example, people who are laying in bed because it's often late at night or early in the morning, who then get shot because of the rampant and wanton firing of bullets. What I end up seeing, like I said, is a lot of head injuries, people who come in essentially brain dead. Even with the best care, they may not survive. However, with the massive shortages, we have shortages of fuel, which means that we have shortages of oxygen. We also have shortages of equipment, which means that we don't have basic supplies to treat our patients. Yesterday, when we had one of these massacres, not an aid massacre, but a tent massacre, yet another new form of depravity we didn't know before this war. And I was on the ground trying to intubate, to provide advanced assistance to a patient while I was on my stomach on the floor and the patient was on his back on the floor. So what we see is these reckless types of injuries in addition to specifically targeted and sniper type injuries that result in literally dozens of deaths every single day, if not hundreds. And also hundreds of injuries that then we have a very hard time treating because of the severe lack of equipment.
I wanted to ask you, Dr. Tariq Loubani, about Israeli forces targeting Palestinian medical staff. I mean, you have doctors detained like Dr. Abu Safia, if you have heard anywhere where he is. And then we've gotten reports most recently about threats to medical staff at Nasser, where you are. An email medical staff are receiving threatening texts. Do you know anything about this?
Yes, absolutely. We are, as medical staff, we are a number one public enemy for the Israeli army. We know that. It's been clear since the beginning, and Palestinian medical workers have said that. Over 1,500 medical workers in Palestine have been killed in the last 2 years. At least 350 remain in Israeli captivity today. Many, many more people are disappeared. And it is clear that there's a war on the entire medical system. At the very best, we receive drips and drabs of medical equipment. Yesterday, I was reviewing the inventory so that we could try to figure out what to prioritize bringing in. The reality is that over 80% of all essential medications are completely stocked out. And that's figures that, you know, I see day to day. That's figures that the Ministry of Health, the World Health Organization are all releasing. There's no secrets here. And of course, when I came into Gaza and when other medical teams come into Gaza, if any of them have anything that resembles medical equipment that could be used on others, it is confiscated at the border. So yes, we as a medical system are targeted. The texts you're talking about are texts that were received by everybody at the Nasser Medical Complex yesterday who had a cell phone, especially the medical team, telling them that they were de facto targets of the Israeli military, and that unless they turned themselves in and turned who even knows in, then they would be considered as hostile enemies.
So we're talking about the massive injuries, the dead. What about the condition of people starving?
Every single patient I see is in a state of starvation at this point. And, you know, I know starvation. I've seen, you know, people go on hunger strike and things like this. I myself have previously been on hunger strike. I've seen people who haven't been able to eat for a week or two or three. That's not what I'm seeing here. What I'm seeing here is people who have completely depleted all of their protein stores, all of their fat stores, who are literally skin and bones that I've only seen in textbooks and history videos. And when they come, you know, they tell me, when I ask sometimes out of curiosity, well, what took you to the aid sites? And they tell me about how hungry they are. They tell me about how hungry their families are. Like one man just two or three days ago who was shot in the head. He was brain dead when I saw him. And when I asked his family why he went, they said because his four children were so starved that he finally decided to risk it. Of course, ended up losing his life over it. The starvation levels affect 100% of people in Gaza. Nobody at all is spared. Every single person is hungry. And the most incredible thing to me was how quickly it set in, even for people like me, who arrived well-fed and healthy, and then immediately started to experience these severe caloric deficits from the first day. So not only are we not receiving food, not receiving enough calories, the food we receive is not nutritious. We're allowed to eat rice. We're allowed to sometimes eat lentils. You can't raise babies on that. You know, there is no policy that justifies baby formula being denied entry into a place like Gaza. And yet I visited the pediatric malnutrition wards. It is a horror show of little children who really should be thriving and who are withering away one moment at a time while their parents don't know what to do and sometimes are willing to take the risks to go to these aid sites so they can try to feed them.
Can you talk about the push to move people south, people who've been displaced over and over again? We just had a headline that former Israeli Prime Ministers Ehud Olmert and Yair Lapid have denounced a proposal by Netanyahu's government to forcibly move Palestinians in Gaza into a so-called humanitarian city to be built on the ruins of Rafah. Both have called it a concentration camp. You have Yair Lapid saying that if they cannot exit, it is a concentration camp. And talk about this procession of humanity south.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that Israeli politicians have finally come to the same realization that Palestinian healthcare workers and activists have been talking about for, at this point, over 2 months. This is not a new idea. It is clear that the Israelis have been trying to trap Palestinians in concentration camps. I mean, for all intents and purposes, Gaza was an open-air prison before the war, and Palestinians had been warning about the possibility of that turning into a concentration camp at any moment. So, yes, I'm glad that they've now arrived to this conclusion. I'm glad that the Western world is now taking the Palestinian warning seriously about a concentration camp. What the Israelis have been proposing to do now for at least the last 6 months is to try to put all Palestinians into a small area where they have full and complete oversight, where they can dictate life or death, and where they can dictate all of the terms and conditions under which that life or death happen. And of course, as we see from the GHF's operating philosophy, they would be able to kill anybody who they wanted at any point. I mean, right now, the GHF receives people who they run through all of these security checks and despite that is murdering them, gunning them down with wanton, reckless abandon. So I think that the idea of a concentration camp is predicated on forcing people out. You know, there's nothing voluntary about it, as some Israeli politicians talk about, on forcing people out by removing all of the ingredients of life. We've seen them remove clean water. There's no clean water in Gaza for any intents and purposes. There's no food really anywhere, and it's getting worse by the day. There's no fuel. The fuel shortages that I mentioned earlier are yet worse than they've ever been. And all of this has been resulting in hundreds of additional deaths each day. I see patients who are shot every single day. I see patients who are blown up every single day. But what's new over the past month is that now I also see patients who are starving to death or who have starved to death. I see little babies, which are often reported, sometimes not. And I also see elderly people.